It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie joins Adam Engst and me. I'm back, baby, to talk about Apple. Their stock price is tumbling. Why? We'll find out next on Mac Break.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 333, recorded January 15th, 2013. Apple Shorts. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is the reliable domain name registration and management service that's simple, honest, and easy to use. For exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain name, go to hover.com/MacBreak and use the offer code MacBreak. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code MacBreak to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak1. And don't forget to try their newly launched developer platform for complete code control. This is the place. You came to the right place. Welcome to Mac Break Weekly. This is where we're going to cheer you up about Apple's tumbling stock price, the lack of sales of the iPhone 5, and a consumer electronics show that was nothing more than just more cases slightly taller. Ladies and gentlemen, now I'm depressed. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times.
You know, Leo, and to all listeners out there who own Apple stock, you know, fresh pineapple still tastes like fresh pineapple.
Thank God.
The memory of your grandmother's fresh baked Christmas sugar cookies, those are still wonderful and affirming and nourishing in its own way. So the fact that Apple's price is now, believe it or not, a single share of Apple stock is now actually less expensive than many Apple products. I know that's weird, but that doesn't mean that this is going to be a miasma of darkness and joyless
it's
luster.
Over. No, it's over.
Leo, it is. I want you to take off your shoes right now and go, well, Pasadena, but where are you right
off.
Now?
I'm taking my shoes off and I'm going to go downtown Pasadena.
Find some cool grass and just run around. Try to step around the hypodermics and the broken glass.
That's Pasadena. That's not Petaluma.
Breathe in. Oh,
Petaluma. Also here from Montreal, where hypodermics are freely available to any addict who needs one, Mr. Rene Ritchie of iMore.com.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing? I'm taking the opposite bent from Andy. Everyone who's been shorting Apple stock and spreading fake rumors so that they don't have to cover it, it's party time.
Well done. you've succeeded.
Winning.
And finally, let's say hi to Adam Engst of Tidbits. Hey, Adam, good to see you. Look at, he's in a beautiful... It looks like an ocean environment. Are you in Hawaii right now?
From his office high atop the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C.
Good to have you, Adam. Welcome to the show. How are you all? It's my first Mac break in some time. I want to thank Sarah Lane for filling in for me last week while I was slogging through CES in the week before the holidays and the week before that when it was a best of. And I haven't been here in a month. But and I'll tell you what, since I was here last, the Apple stock price has gone down over $200. So maybe I was just thinking maybe we could wait until it gets even low. Wow, down $16 today alone, probably based on that Wall Street Journal report that iPhone sales are down dramatically. There's kind of a battle going on over this, though. Daring Fireballs' John Gruber says, hold on. Didn't Verizon say that iPhone sales were strong? Verizon say that they had 9.1 million smartphone activations and a higher mix of Apple smartphones than previously? Didn't AT&T report its best quarterly sales of Android and Apple smartphones? Of course, both of those reports have Android mixed in there, which... the Wall Street Journal said weaker than expected demand from people familiar with the situation...
One and a half of them.
Expected by who?
Well, that was the question Gruber said. Expected by whom? And what was the expectation?
They took that out. I mean, they actually had a figure in the original article of 65 million for Q2, which is an outrageous, outlandish number by Q2 standards. It's not the holiday quarter. It's the weaker quarter after that. And then they removed that number, but it came back when Reuters and Nikkei posted almost identical stories with the 65 million number.
Isn't that telling? So all the Wall Street Journal said is Apple cuts orders for iPhone parts. Apple has cut its orders for components for the iPhone 5 due to weaker than expected demand. And if you read that without that 62 million, what you might say is, oh, Apple's the iPhone's not selling very well. But that's not what this says.
No, and it's John's quoting numbers from Q1 because that's the giant massive quarter that they're going to report on at the end of the month. And these are Q2 numbers, and Q2 is usually much smaller than Q1. I think it was 15 some odd million 2 years ago, 30 million last year. But there is no universe, real or imagined, where Apple would expect to sell 65 million. I mean, absent a China mobile deal or
that would be an error then if they had that. Did they have that expectation? Did they have orders to fulfill of that number? I mean,
1.5 people said they did.
1.5 said. It's really Jim Dalrymple story. In the Loop says Apple cannot respond to these rumors even if it wanted to due to SEC rules. Apple can't just say, no, it's not true. It's not true.
That's not accurate, though. It's common practice, but it's not legal. I think Eric Silva from Mac Rumors expounded on that. And they could say something if they wanted to. It's just a general practice not to.
They're kind of in a quiet period leading up to their quarterly earnings, which will be a week from tomorrow. You know, and that's what Gruber says. He's, I mean, the bottom line on this is somebody's going to be embarrassed in a week. And it'll either be the bulls who say, oh, no, this is nonsense. Apple's doing great. Or the bears who are saying, well, the iPhone 5 is not selling that well. Certainly the stock market believes it because, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I don't know if – by the way, this isn't really a data point. Well, it's a data point, but I don't know how valuable it is as a data point. It's just the stock market, but down to 485.
With this 65 million number, I mean, there's been this claim that, oh, Apple would never sell that many in a quarter, but who says that they have to buy for a quarter at once? They may be placing orders down the line to solidify position, you know, to solidify stock. I mean, Apple will often buy in large bulk. So they could be buying this for a year in advance, knowing that they're going to be building phones that have that form factor, and they may have decided that maybe they didn't need to buy a year in advance; they don't need to buy 6 months in advance and cut it in half.
Yeah, I mean, I happened to be traveling yesterday, and when I came back, when I took the train back home, and I've got those 3 hours where I can finally like catch up on all the news I missed. I felt like the parent who had left the house in the hands of their kids and come back to find out exactly what has happened, why they were spending the weekend away. Because I read the Wall Street Journal report, which immediately made me think, for all the reasons that everybody here has been talking about, that okay, first of all, it's one unnamed, it's a short unnamed source. So
although the journal's been good with sources
again. Also realize that this isn't like a blog style editorial structure. They have to convince a whole bunch of people that this is a good piece of information. But still, that's still the reliability of a very small core sample. They're not going based on hard primary evidence or hard primary data. They're saying here is a component that we think is being under ordered. We don't know that that necessarily translates to poor sales, but we're going to extrapolate like that. I thought it was practically it was the sort of thing that's very easy to ignore. But, you know, this is why I tend to have a hands-off sort of attitude towards the stock price, because it's going to do what it's going to do for whatever reason it's going to happen. And there's almost no way to predict how that happened. If we're going to get all bent out of shape it's a problem if it causes long-term destability for the company, but that's not going to happen to a company like Apple. Every time that if you're upset that the stock price is dipping below $500 and you're not an investor, you have to also if you're going to take it that means that the popularity of Apple products is waning, then you also have to say that when the stock price was above 700, when it was 200 points higher, that means that that's a sign of Apple's complete strength. It had nothing to do with the design of their products, had nothing to do with their core strategy. We're going to use this number as the only metric of whether we have faith in this company. So it's the sort of baseball that I'm just not interested in the stands for.
One thing that's worth pointing out is that we won't really find out about this when Apple does their earnings, because they're going to report Q1 earnings, and these are Q2 numbers. So that's at least 3 months out. But there was this really great video from Jim Cramer in 2010 that explained how he manipulated RIM and Apple stock prices and how easy it was to do by just calling different people. And that doesn't seem to have changed. When you look at all the rumors and you look at how the stock prices go up and down, the Wall Street Journal's masthead was on this story, I think, lent it a lot more credibility than would have otherwise, because it really smelled like those kinds of, I have a friend of a friend and I'm putting this order here and that order there kind of
manipulation. Don't we know who's shorting in large quantity and how much they're shorting, or is that not public information? Don't you kind of know who's going to benefit from this? I don't know how this stuff works.
Well, even if it's not in large quantities, I think, with the accusations like this, I think the SEC looks very, very dimly on this sort of thing. And so if there's any indication that it was actually done intentionally, someone's going to be in really, really big trouble.
Although he maintained that they don't understand the way that this is done in an information age.
The SEC does not.
Yeah.
The SEC can't handle it. You can't
understand
handle
how blogs
truth.
Work. And yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, let's step back then a little bit from that story, knowing that, in fact, A, we don't know what it means or whether it's true. We don't even know whether it's true, but even if it were true, we don't know what it means. We do know the stock price is going down, but that only means that maybe there's some investors who believe this and some who don't. I'm going to give you from a purely anecdotal point of view. It does feel like to me, far more people are willing to look at Android than were in the past, that there are significant numbers of defections from the iPhone, that the iPhone 5 was not a particularly inspiring update, given that it was the big update as opposed to the minor update. And then I wouldn't be surprised. To me, it doesn't sound surprising that iPhone 5 sales might be soft. Do you disagree, Renee?
I would quibble a little bit and say I think the iPhone 5 was a fantastic update, but I don't think iOS 6 was in any way inspired, especially with what we saw with stuff like Android 4.0 Jelly Bean. And I think that the market is widening and Android is taking a lot of that widening market. And I think that's the area that Apple has to concern themselves with, not so much the physical goods they're making anymore, because we've gotten to the point where almost any phone is good enough for the mainstream user now. And it's really the software and especially the services. When you have things like Google Now and you have things like Search and all these different things that we're doing with our phones every day. And that's the area Apple's going to have to pay a lot of attention to this year.
You don't think the fact that the 4-inch screen of the iPhone, I mean, they made it a little bit bigger, but it's pretty clear the trend is towards larger screens, much larger in my case.
Here's the thing for me. If I walk into Best Buy and every television set, regardless of size, costs the same thing, which is what happens in a subsidized cell phone market at a carrier store, a lot of people would just buy the biggest television set they can fit
more.
Into their house.
You get more.
Yeah, it seems like more. And the Lumia 920 is actually half the price of the iPhone 5, and it's got a giant screen. And a lot of carriers list by spec, and some carriers are motivated or have better remunerations for selling some phones more than others. So given those conditions, I think the large screens have a lot of appeal for people who actually want a large screen, but for people who don't care but see a large screen as better value.
And traditional Apple advantages are not Siri, for instance, has been basically matched by Android's speech to text. The camera that was always so good on the iPhone, maybe it's still the best, but it's only the best by a little bit.
Well, I really think the camera right now is the only thing they've got going that is absolutely without any real argument the best in class. If that is the metric that you really want to judge a phone by, you really want nothing other than an iPhone. Even the Lumia 920 has a camera that can absolutely spank the iPhone in a couple of situations, but on a broad range of stuff, the camera is still good. But the real problem is that it's very, very hard to create a compelling case that the iPhone 5 hardware is better than a top tier, like multi-core Android phone. It's hard to make the case that iOS 6 is better than Android 4.1 or 4.2, especially. You can make the case that it's better for some users, just like you can, but you have, I think you really now have two platforms that are on absolutely equal footing. And it's that point at which someone will say, well, if I like these two phones equally, maybe I may as well get the one with the big screen because it's going to be easier to read. Oh, well, look the first thing I'm going to launch is the Kindle app. Oh, look, there are fewer page turns on this app than I do on the iPhone. So that's where they're vulnerable. I really think this is a year in which Apple is going to have to really refocus on restoring the iPhone to a place where we can say, yes, this is better than the majority of the other handsets out there. That hasn't been true for several months now.
The other thing that I think really does come into play here, though, is the iPhone 5 is competing against the 4S and the 4. And as a result, if you just want to pay less for a phone, it's really easy to buy an iPhone without buying an iPhone 5. And similarly, the jump from the 4S to the 5, even though it's a number jump, is not that great. You know, that it really comes down to just the screen and some thinness. And so, you know, people aren't going to be upgrading from that too much. And Apple doesn't really want you to. I mean, Apple is very much on a two-year upgrade cycle. So, you know, if the iPhone 5 sales aren't quite up to snuff, I'd think that really that you want to look at the cannibalization on the lower-end models as well.
I'm going to say something that people are going to get mad at. Because I like to stir up trouble. I think that the what we've been waiting for or worried about is actually happening, that Apple has lost its mojo after losing Steve Jobs. And I think this is the beginning of a long decline. I think this
it's too soon.
I think no, it's not too soon. I think I would have been too soon a year ago. I think this is exactly what we're seeing now, and I think that you will be able to say that the day the iPhone 5 came out is the day that became apparent that Steve Jobs was Apple, and without Steve Jobs, Apple's back to the bad old days.
What would he have done differently? I mean, I don't think we've seen anything here that Steve Jobs would have done differently up until this point. Like, these are probably the devices that
these are the last devices. Yeah, these are his last devices.
Yeah. That's why I said it's too soon.
That's well.
Also, I think that the real issue here is that when you get down to it, the iPhone 5, all the features that it has, the form factor it has, apart from it being super, super thin, is pretty much any phone that you could describe that had been released up to a year before then. So much of why each release of every iPhone after the first one seemed so significant and seemed so transformative was because it went from being just an edge phone to 3G. It went from being 3G to LTE. It went from having a kind of crummy resolution screen and camera to a wonderful resolution screen and camera. So the problem is that now that they're at a stage where they have to really, I wouldn't say reinvent it, but they have to figure out what can we learn from the past, good God, 6 years of iPhone history that will allow us to make iOS 10, let's say, and the iPhone 8, let's say, something that no current user of the current operating system and phone would even recognize, but would instantly dump whatever they've got in their hands right now in favor of. So we can't allow ourselves to believe that Apple absolutely reinvented the phone every time they went at it. So maybe this is as good as it gets for now, and until they find a good device that's going to replace it, this is what we're kind of stuck with. So the pressure's on the apps now.
I'd agree with you, except that I think Android has lapped Apple.
Right, but it's like, so let's say Steve Jobs is still in the saddle, and he's still as hands-on as he was before. What would they do to the iPhone that would not have been done already?
I'll tell you what they should do in May or June is they should release an iPad mini with phone capability.
With phone.app built into it?
Yeah. And a SIM card or whatever it takes to, in other words, they should make a mini iPhone.
They're gonna tell you, great, we've got FaceTime, it's even better than using a telephone. What's next? I honestly think that's what old the app. I'm not going to get into what Steve would have done because I have no idea what Steve would have done.
No one knows, of course.
The Apple that I've just like you kind of can figure out what kind of a movie Quentin Tarantino would make next, what kind of a movie Spielberg would make next,
right?
You know, and if I were to figure out what they would what move this director, this creator, this producer would make, it would be the person who says, why do we need a phone carrier anyway? Why wouldn't you want something that could evolve far faster than the phone networks could? So I'm not sure if that's what they would do. I do think that, you know, you were mentioning probably the Note 2. I do think that they need to experiment with different form factors because this size device is very, very, very compelling.
I've been using a note for a year and a half, and I have to say people laughed a lot at me when I started using it. But when you start, once it, and it takes a while. You got to go, what do you want such a big thing for? It looks like a family-sized Hershey bar on your head. And I think when, but what's happened is people say as they've gradually gotten exposed to it and started to use it, oh, this is good. And I think this time maybe Apple should leapfrog this. I think people want something big. They want to take one device that is both a tablet and a phone. Yeah. And I disagree that FaceTime is sufficient.
I think there's two interesting things at play here. You know, Apple is almost never the early adapter, so they're probably content to let Samsung release screen sizes at quarter-inch increments and see which ones, like the Note or like Huawei's new 6-inch phablet phone, are going to take off. And
while pretending not to watch at all.
Well, absolutely.
While
mocking it. And then they will pick the two models that offer that have the best addressable market for them. And then maybe there'll be a 4-inch and a 5-inch, and that'll be it, the way we got an iPad mini. But the other thing is that Apple still has to address – Apple used to have the lock-in that they had because of their ecosystem. But now companies like Samsung and LG, who also make ovens, like the big joke at CES was the Android-powered oven. But it's not a joke. You have a vacuum cleaner controlled by Android. You have a refrigerator controlled by Android. And your phone on your way home can vacuum for you and remind you to pick up milk and do all these things. And because these huge conglomerates make so many different appliances and devices, they can offer a very compelling ecosystem that's even bigger than the one that Apple used to have with the Media Hub.
Yeah,
but that's not an ecosystem that people have expressed any interest in yet. There's a long list of technologies, including like 3D video glasses, you know, laser projection keyboard, and to a certain extent, voice control. That they're cool ideas. They make for a great demo. You would think that people would want something like this, but nobody has ever. No consumer has ever said that this is exactly what I want in product. But it's both companies have a certain degree of power in exercising their leverage. Samsung, in the sense that we can make whatever we want, and we are a big enough company that we don't have all of our fortunes. Our stock price is not going to go down because we produced this phone, and this phone did not sell as well as analysts predicted, because they've got four other phones and 12 other toaster ovens right behind
them.
That's
a strength, Apple, isn't it? That's a big strength.
Right. Apple has the same thing going on, where they can leverage their control not in other hardware, but in other forms of content. And one of the problems that they're facing is that there was a time when if you wanted music, of course you're going to go through the iTunes store. Where else you're going to go? If you want to get movies, of course you're going to go to the movies and television. You're going to go to the iTunes store. Where else you're going to go? Now that stuff is being licensed out to so many libraries that you have a great many options. And now that you have companies like Amazon that can do really weird things, like say, well, tell you what, if you can buy our music digitally, or if you buy it on CD, we'll send you the CD and we'll also give it to you digitally. These are weird. These are things where Apple's going to have to figure out what their core story is and make sure that they're telling that story in a way that's really clear and compelling. I know that they're losing a lot of people. I know a lot of people who were real dyed-in-the-wool Apple folks. I'm not talking about myself here, but real dyed-in-the-wool who never thought that they would switch to Windows, never thought they'd be using an Android device. But now they're like, you know what? We had the option of buying a different kind of phone. I tried it for a month, and now, damn it, I'm switching to Android. Or now I really like Windows 7 because of there's this style of tablet, there's this style of computer that I really, really like that Apple doesn't make and has no interest in making, but I want it, so I got it.
Or come the end of January when BlackBerry 10 launches, Apple will have the oldest major mobile operating system on the planet. And that's the position they've never been in.
That's an interesting way of putting it, isn't it? Yes, who'd have thought that?
Plus, I'm sorry, go ahead. I interrupted. Go ahead.
I was probably going to say something very similar. You know, and BlackBerry was once a very powerful company, and Apple has shown that powerful companies can come back, and they have a lot of interesting ideas. And it looks like we're approaching a next transition where, you know, people joke about icons on a grid, but widgets on a screen, all these things are old generation technology. It's a way to pull information, and we're moving into a push information era with things like Google Now, and Siri's not there yet, but it could be. And iOS 7, I think, is going to be absolutely key for Apple, because they're going to need to leapfrog again. They're going to need to take interface places like with actionable notifications and things that really allow us to have the data brought to us, so that it's not just a battle between who has the bigger screen anymore, but Apple's once again doing what they say they do in their DNA, which is great software to sell their hardware.
Yeah,
so the question is, for all these hardware, what would it take for you to switch? Is it really hardware? Or is it that larger ecosystem? I mean, the thing that's been getting me recently about Apple is the level to which they're forcing us into the ecosystem, that once you do one thing, you're stuck in with the rest of it and you just don't have any alternatives at all. And, you know, I don't want my vacuum cleaner to be ordering my milk, but nonetheless, you know, there are other possibilities that it feels like could come up and Apple would just simply not approve the apps. And suddenly that whole alternative is just not available.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I've had to restructure a bunch of different ways about how I run my office and how I run my creative business. And one of them is that, okay, I finally need to have a core central notes app. I need a way to track and schedule these sort of things. And what I started off with was, of course, reminders and notes on iOS.
Can't do it.
And after I started using that for about like a month, I realized, okay, I can make the system work. It became important to me that I switched to Evernote because I knew that if I build my business around notes and reminders, I will never have the freedom to choose something that is not an Apple product because Apple's not going to extend that to make it work with other things. So, I mean, it's starting to be the level of control that Apple exerts over their software and hardware has a great many advantages and so many that can't be denied for people who are, they don't really want to learn new stuff. They don't want to care about how to make things work absolutely precisely the way they want. They just want something functional. Again, they want the fleet vehicle that works really well. But this is starting, I think we might be at that part of the curve where we're going to start a decline where this amount of control that Apple's putting on things is actually limiting opportunities for users to do things. It's become, instead of an asset, it's going to, for Apple,
precisely,
it's going to start to become a disadvantage. The problem is that when you have had the same thing going for the same reasons without a lot of really visible, I'm underscoring the word visible, innovation, that really leaves a platform vulnerable to someone who comes up with a great idea. And RIM is coming out with BlackBerry 10 at the end of the month. The feature that really caught my attention that I had them explain to me like two or three times to make sure they weren't doing this in a lame way was the idea that we're sick and tired of people who have they've got the phone that was issued to them by their company, but they also have like their iPhone or their Android phone, their personal device, because it's too hard to keep. There are different rules and regulations, and also they don't want the creepy IT guy to get a hold of their family pictures. A feature of BlackBerry 10 is that essentially this is two separate firewalled partitions in one, so that it's like the mullet of business phones, where it's all business up front but it's party in the back, and you really don't get the same and so you can basically have one phone that does everything like that. That's interesting.
Balance.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. And if you have people who, just as we've been discussing, aren't passionate phone users, aren't passionate techies, they just want something functional that works, they might find that there are enough apps inside the BlackBerry marketplace that all the lifestyle apps and personal apps that I want are there, and now I can just carry this one phone around that will just work for me, and I don't have to keep two things charged up at the same time. So that's a vulnerability when you have that one compelling idea that makes people think, yes, I would like to carry just one device. Great. My contract's up. I think I'll give this BlackBerry 10 a try, or at least if my company's supporting it.
Here's the other thing, which is I think that Apple has focused very, very hard on the individual, and that's great, but that's actually somewhat in contrast to the prevailing trend on the internet now, which is to bring people together, to allow collaboration. And yeah, Apple's thrown in Twitter and Facebook. They can do some of the social stuff. But when it comes to working on interesting things with other people, Apple just doesn't make it any easier than certainly any easier than anyone else. They just aren't doing interesting stuff there. Whenever you look at the iCloud stuff, it's all your devices, your data. And if you want to share that data with someone else, tough nuggies. It just doesn't happen. Yeah. And so to my mind, you know, because I'm actually honestly starting to think, geez, maybe my next, you know, phone is not going to be an iPhone. If there's something compelling about the collaborative capabilities of another system, because that's what I do. I spend my entire flipping day talking on email, using Skype, using Google Hangouts, you know, all this kind of stuff where I'm working with other people, collaborating in Trello. You know, it's all other systems, and that is to a certain extent work on iOS, but I just don't feel like Apple cares about that.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a certain level, if they don't care about it, then maybe I'm going to go looking for someone who does.
I think it's important to put in context, though. I mean, I used a Nexus 4 throughout CES, and And while we're piling a little bit on Apple here, Android is just as annoying. Windows Phone is just as annoying. None of them, it's huge competition. And I think Andy said this before, all of them have their strong points and weak points. There's no ideal solution. And it's going to be a lot of pay. Like Google, for everything that Android is less significant to Google's business than the Apple TV is to Apple. And Google's leadership, they are not as hugely invested in Android as Apple's leadership is invested in the iPhone. Mm-hmm. It's just not that big a part of their business. So people like us are going to be disappointed no matter which device we have, because we're always going to want better, and we're always going to want every feature from every phone all in one.
Okay, everybody have their say?
I killed that one.
No, I thought that was great. And I frankly thought you'd all be yelling at me, so I'm glad... Glad to see that, in fact, I wasn't that far off. We'll watch with interest. It's not our job to predict the future, and no one knows what the future is going to be. But I think we all agree there's a challenge ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll end with this, I'll spank you lightly about the, again, this is what happens when Steve Jobs leaves the company. Because again, I've never had a taste for that kind of commentary. I mean, we don't know what he would have done. We don't know. We realize that most tech companies, they aren't led by the same guy for generation after generation. There comes a time at which this person just doesn't has a vision that doesn't matter. The users just move away from him, or their level of passionate interest in making this the focus of their life wanes as they realize that I got $4.8 billion. Why the hell am I worried so much about one part that one supplier may or may not be provide us with at the cost that we need it to be? At that point, you got to step aside and move it to the other place. I mean, Microsoft has gone through this exact same thing because Bill Gates, you know, has.
Well, I think you can make a case that Microsoft has floundered since Gates left.
Well, they went through a middle period, but now in the past two or three years, they emerged from that malaise when the Xbox came out, and it took it a couple of years for them to figure out exactly how much potential they had inside the Xbox. But man alive, they've got all the parts to the killer monster robot in three pieces in their backyard. And at some point, you know, Microsoft is going to be on their back porch with their morning cup of coffee. They say, wait a minute, if I snap that part onto that part and then mount it on top of that, we could rule the world. And really, all the pieces are right there. So,
I don't want to get an argument about the future of Microsoft. I think that there is a data point that you can't ignore. Apple, we've always said Apple's not like any other company. That Apple did not do well, has never done well without Steve Jobs at the helm. And I don't think that that's a stretch to say that partly without his vision, but more importantly, without his marketing and his
force of personality.
His force, it's hard to be as big a winner as Apple is. And
my gut says that it's a normalized Apple now. The way Lucasfilm has been sold to Disney, so we'll never likely get Empire Strikes Back again.
Thank
but we
God.
Won't have to suffer with the prequels.
Yeah, we don't have to get Episode One again. I'm happy.
Yes. Okay. But so we'll never get the higher highs, but we won't get the lower lows.
Right. I don't know if that's true, actually, but that's another story. I might disagree with you, Dad.
Can I pick upon what I feel is a very useful and brilliant analogy?
Yes.
I mean, we get the prequels, which disappoint everybody, but then we also get the Clone Wars. Series, which nobody who grew up watching Star Wars would have conceived of or approved. But once a new generation once the old guard is cleared out a little bit to simply look at what they have to work with and what they could build from it, man, you can get back on your feet in a hurry.
Why is this Andy and not Co?
We're going to take a break. Come back with more. I agree. Wise is that one. Let's talk about Hover.com. If you're wise, you're looking for a domain name registrar that's not going to get in the way, that's going to get the job done, that's going to simplify domain name management. Okay, yes, I admit, Hover does not have scantily clad girls in their ads. Some might say that's a negative. Doesn't bother me. What they do have is the best domain name registrar and management ever. I want you to visit hover.com/MacBreak. By doing so, you could save 10% on your next domain registration. Browse around, though, and see what makes Hover so great. I moved all of our domains from a variety of registrars over to Hover, and I can't be happier than I am. It's just fantastic. by going to hover.com/MacBreak, you'll see you'll activate the promotional code. You'll get the 10% off. It's very straightforward. You don't get 50 clicks, all the upselling that you get from other domain registrars. Each domain includes unlimited domain forwarding. No charge Whois privacy. That's built in. They know you want that, so they just include it at no cost. Powerful domain editing, advanced DNS management in bulk. The management system is very clear, very easy to use. I highly recommend it. And they have a no-hold policy, which means if you get through to Hubbard tech support during regular business hours, once you get through, they will keep you on the line until they solve the problem. Hover offers 23 TLDs like .com, .net, .org, as well as .tv, .pro, .mobi, .biz. Of course, country-level, top-level domains, .ca, .asia, .us, .uk. I'm a big fan. I know you will be too. Hover.com/MacBreak to save 10%. Hover's in it for the long haul too. I got to say, they really are the best. A part of Two Cows. They've been around since 1994. They're one of the largest domain name registrars in the world, and we just wanted everybody to know more about them. So I'm really glad to be doing their ads. Hover.com/MacBreak to save 10% on your next domain name registration. You're watching Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie from iMore, and Adam Engst from Tidbits. We're talking about the Apple. By the way, some good Apple news. Apple won a Technology and Engineering Emmy Award for 2012. Or actually, they'll receive one. They received one at CES. This is the category. Ecosystem for real-time presentation of TV content to mobile devices without the use of special televised hardware. I don't know how they could lose that one.
No antennas. They win.
They win. So good going, Apple. And they've received engineering awards pretty much every year from the Emmys for FireWire, for Final Cut Pro.
Just one day, I would like to see them actually handed one of those awards from somebody in the mainstream Emmy show.
George Clooney.
Richard Dreyfuss. Exactly.
So they should be presented by someone who has a hit show on like HBO.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
As opposed to...
I like it. Maybe Lena can give him...
Kid from Two and a Half Men.
No, I want the woman from Girls. She can handle
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, yeah. Let's have Eddard Stark give them the award. And then chop their heads off. Apple slashes price on Thunderbolt cable.
About time. Not exactly slash, though.
Slashed? Still, well, it was $50. How much is it now?
40.
Yeah.
It's a cable, for goodness sakes.
You save a lot of money when you stop making them out of printer ink.
Well, I asked a lot of the accessory makers at CES about lightning cables and Thunderbolt cables,
their story
was always the same. It's just that these companies were not ready to supply the parts or the people who need to oversee and approve the accessories at anywhere near a responsible rate. And we saw that with Apple and the iPhone launch, where they put 50 million phones on the shelves, but not a single lightning adapter for months.
Right.
I think it was just complete lack of preparation or investment in the technology they needed to make these things.
You know what? I would like to know your opinion on this. Apple just started selling these, and I bought about a dozen of them. They're $19. It's a micro USB to lightning adapter. It allows you to sync, to charge. It does most of what the lightning adapter does. It's $19. And it really begs the question, Apple, why didn't you use micro USB to begin with? These are great because they're tiny, and you just put them right on the cable. And, you know, because I have 800 micro USB cables.
What's Lightning does more than micro USB, though. So it's an intelligent switch, and it's got... I mean, the 30-pin legacy stuff had tons of stuff in there. There was FireWire and HDMI and line-in and line-out and video
but
in
this,
and video
this
out.
This charges and syncs, which is most of what you want. It eliminates what? HDMI?
It won't do the car stuff, any of the car integration stuff. It won't do. It won't do any of the...
It doesn't do iPod. Can't control an iPod with it.
Yeah, and anything that Apple builds in going forward, it won't be able to do. I would argue that cables are becoming less and less important in general, because we do all the sorts of syncing and all sorts of AirPlay, and even wireless charging is becoming more and more common. So the cable will probably go out of the way, but the Lightning cable is designed to do far more than a USB cable can handle.
My understanding is that Lightning to micro USB adapter was also required because of regulations in Europe.
Yeah, they have to bundle it in Europe, yeah. It just, if I have to say, if iPhone 5 sales are disappointing, some of that, some significant percentage of that has to be people who said, I am not getting a Lightning adapter. I'm going to stick with my 30-pin cable.
Oh, I don't know. I think if anybody made that decision, they were very foolish. I mean, you buy a cable once and that's it. Yeah,
yeah, I have bought so many, I bought $200 worth of Lightning adapter cables.
We bitch every week about we want new things, we want what's next, and then when companies introduce them, we say, oh, you've obsoleted everything I used to have. So we complain no matter what.
No, I may want it, but I'm just saying most normal people are pissed off.
Yeah.
They're saying, well, I have to buy all new cables, I have to buy hundreds of dollars worth of converters.
Well, fit in my stereo box.
Is that not, don't you think normal people kind of look at that and go, why? Do I have to do that? I know. We know why. I understand that.
Well, I think that normal people, they have one phone, and they're going to have that one phone for 2 years. And I don't think that – I just don't think it's that big. If you include a charging and sync cable in the box with the new phone that you get, I don't think most people are going to be very, very upset that the nightstand clock radio they bought 2 years ago doesn't necessarily work with it. They might be bummed about it, but I don't think they have that broadened awareness that says that, gosh, they should have kept the same.
Well, it wouldn't make much difference if there weren't good competition, good stuff out there as an alternative. But yeah. I think it's just, I agree, it's not a deal breaker, but it's one more data point that I don't think is a good data point for them. But I've said that for a long time, and obviously I'm wrong, so.
If we didn't have the Lightning cable, we would have had a thick iPhone 5. And
no, I understand. I understand why they did it. And I'm technical enough that I get it. I'm just thinking that that's got to be a reason that some people go, really? I got to get all new cables and new connectors and it won't work in my car? Really?
You only find out when they get home, Leo. They buy it and then they go home and get upset.
People are smarter than you think. I think they actually know. Let me put it this way. I hear it on the radio show a lot.
Yeah.
I talk to real people every single weekend, and I'm starting to know what baffles them and bothers them. That's one thing. I have to say kudos to Apple. I bought $1,000 27-inch Thunderbolt display, and it did include the changed mags and adapter, so I could use my MacBook Pro Retina with it.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's little things like I travel.
That adapter change is just annoying. At least with Lightning, they said, oh well, look, we can make it so much thinner, but. MagSafe 2, it's just not that much different.
There's no point. It was just a way to make more money.
I don't even think it's a way to make money. There must have been some engineering reason for it, but they certainly didn't justify it in any way that made sense.
Yeah. They had to bundle that adapter in. I was pissed because I thought I had to buy an adapter, and then I dug through the materials because it's this little thing that you could easily throw out.
I find it most noteworthy when I travel. For example, when I was at CES, the hotel had a dock in the radio in the hotel, so you have to have an adapter if you want to use
iPhone. What kind of dock did it have?
It's a 30-pin dock. And when I go to my mom has a CRT TV still, and she has Apple's old AV cable, and she can plug her iPad into that and watch on the TV, and my new iPad just looks at that and screams in frustration.
Yeah. No, I when you go to a hotel and you see a 1,000-room hotel, 1,000 clock radios with 30-pin connectors, you just shake your head. So I think either people are going to buy adapters, which is a significant additional cost because Apple's not discounting those adapters. Anyway, that's an old article.
To me, I would be more upset about it if the 30-pin connector weren't so completely different from the Lightning connector and so completely different from mini USB. I mean, there's so many different kinds of devices that are really, really difficult for Apple to build if it's going to support that kind of really big quarter slot style connector. I mean, even micro USB, which can also transmit video, which can charge and sync, do all these cool stuff. It's nice and thin. It doesn't really control the size and shape of devices you can make. Otherwise, I'd be saying that I've never shied away from being able to say, oh, Apple, why do you so often do things that are just a style thing? But I think that it's a bitter pill to swallow, but that allows better things to happen in the future. I would have been more pleased, though, if they had decided to go with micro USB, or at least said, we're going to take the micro USB standard, we're going to add more stuff to it so that if you aren't using it, we want a standard so that if you're just charging, any micro USB will work. If you're just syncing, any micro USB will work. However, if you buy our special $90 cable, okay, how about a $30 cable that exploits the extra pins that are inside there, then you can actually do more with it than just those two things. I thought thought that would have been very consumer friendly. You know?
I think nickname in our chat room speaks for a number of Apple people who says, Apple has always been an exclusive club, and I like being a part of it. I don't care if they lose market share as long as they produce killer products. That's the old Macintosh attitude, you know, user attitude. And maybe that's the attitude of the future. Maybe that's all it really needs to be is a boutique product.
Their profit share at boutique products is impressive anyway.
It's hell of a good profit share. Their profits, well, we'll see in a week, but I suspect their profits are doing just fine. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, that's it's interesting that ties in a lot of the things we've been talking about. I mean, Apple is different. They don't have to compete with everybody in the entire world. They just have to make products at a good enough margin to a loyal enough customer base that allows them to keep making new products. It'd be interesting if we look forward 5 years from now, Apple's still doing very, very well. Their market share is still not terribly impressive in their respective markets. But the fact is that the people buy things from Apple because they know they can't get products just like they have a natural affection and affinity towards the way that Apple designs things and writes their software, and they know that no other manufacturer is doing it. Right. So if they're not going to win the hearts and minds battles with people who, the average person who buys phones, the average person who buys computers or TVs, it's okay for them to still be making billions of dollars in profits every year just on a 5% fan base. And that's perfectly the whole point of playing this game is to get to come back to the ballpark next season. And if they keep their batting average up, who cares how many products they actually sell, what volume they actually make, and what percentage of the market they actually own, just so long as they keep coming to the ballpark year after year.
Yeah. No, and I think that what's changed is that Apple got a taste of being a mass market manufacturer with the iPhone and the iPad, and there are certainly some who thought, "Oh, this is fun. I like this. I like
finally.
I like being dominant. I don't want to be a boutique yes. anymore."
The collapse of Nokia and BlackBerry, and now Android will probably take the place of Symbian and Nokia, and Apple will. Remember when Steve Jobs first came up on stage and said, "We just want 1 or 2% of the phone market,
right.
and we'll be happy."
Yeah, in the old days, that's all they wanted.
Because Symbian and Nokia and all those companies were so huge
you couldn't
and so
beat
dominant.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll make them all pay.
Finally, we'll have our revenge.
All will pay, some will burn.
Well, maybe that's why Tim Cook's going to China. We'll talk about Mr. Cook in China in just a little bit. But first, a word from Squarespace.com. If you're looking for somebody to host your website, I got a suggestion for you. The best website host in the world, Squarespace.com. One of the things that makes Squarespace so good is the tight integration between the Squarespace software, the content management system you'll be using, and the hosting software. So they know that, you know, sometimes you talk about shared hosting. It's so much more sophisticated than that. Your site may be spread out around a bunch of machines using a bunch of bandwidth. They could turn on more bandwidth as necessary. It's so tightly integrated that they have granular control over exactly what's happening. And it's why, simply put, you cannot bring a Squarespace site down. They're always fast, always responsive. And from your point of view, always gorgeous, easy to design, easy to use. Of course, the best mobile experience. If you're somebody who's looking for a website, a gallery, if you're a photographer or a designer, you've got to look at Squarespace. Not only does it look good and will it reflect your aesthetic, a unique aesthetic, by the way, because every Squarespace site starts with the same, you know, several dozen templates. But then the customization makes it completely your own site, makes it look exactly the way you want it to. That's why so many artists, so many designers, so many photographers use Squarespace, because they can make it reflect exactly their aesthetic. And then, just kind of thrown in for free, you get the best mobile experience. Your users are going to love it because let's say you're a photographer, you're using Avenue as your template and you want a great gallery. The template looks great on all sizes. Every time you here, let me go to a live demo of this. This is Avenue. It's so great because as you size the screen from 27 inches down to 3.5 inches, the site automatically, it's called mobile responsive design, responds to it. Whenever you upload an image to your gallery, for instance, it creates 7 different sized thumbnails so that. And then it flows the text. It flows everything around so that it looks the best on the screen. And this you get automatically. This is part of the deal. I think you're going to love Squarespace. That's why they've got a free template for you, a free trial offer, I should say, for you. If you go to squarespace.com, just click that yellow Get Started button, and you're already in there designing. You can import all your existing content, preserve all the SEO, all the images, all the links. They all go right over. Play with it. You got it 2 weeks free. Use all the help systems, the webinars, everything. And if you decide you like it, you got to look at the pricing on this. It's such a good deal. They've simplified the pricing. There's only two plans now, the standard and the unlimited. You get the best deal when you buy an annual plan. Actually, I think you can even buy more than 1 year at a time. But if you buy a year's worth, the standard plan is $8 a month. The unlimited plan, the top of the line, is only $16 a month. For that, you get unlimited pages, galleries, blogs, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. Whenever you buy an annual plan, they'll automatically register the domain name for you and hook it up so it works. You get so many great features. And when you use our offer code, you can take 10% off that first purchase. So you're going to save even more. MacBreak, and the number one is the offer code, MacBreak1, squarespace.com. Beautiful, beautiful content. If you're a developer, by the way, they've got a developer platform you're going to love that allows you to use HTML5 stuff like CSS3 and JavaScript. And it's got a code editor with syntax coloring and all of that stuff. Squarespace.com. Use our offer code MacBreak1 if you decide to buy to save 10%. Mr. Cook goes to Beijing to meet with China Mobile. Now, that's the largest carrier in China. And iPhone has never been on China Mobile. It's always been on smaller carriers. So Tim Cook met with Xi Guohua, the chairman of China Mobile, to discuss matters of cooperation, according to China Mobile. In other words, I bet you you're going to get an iPhone 5 on China Mobile, which would be huge. They're currently on China Unicom, China Telecom. So this is the part of Apple that still wants to be mass market. They want to dominate. And right now, I think the iPhone's popular, but not as popular as it could be if we're on all the carriers. You would have to, if they get on China Mobile, they would have to redesign the iPhone because it uses an unusual 3G network technology. And some experts say that Apple might be waiting for a new network technology so that they could put the iPhone on it.
It's like Verizon all over again.
Yeah, similar, isn't it?
Every time I hear these stories, I keep thinking, geez, whatever happened to those rumors about Apple, you know, making its own carrier?
Yeah. Yeah, well.
Still be nice.
It would be. I mean,
turned out it was Google.
This pipe dream of having FaceTime replace your telecom is wonderful, but I just don't think Apple's ready to do that.
Well, there certainly are. There's like TruePhone, I guess, had some stuff at CES, and they buy all their service from regional providers and then aggregate it into a single account. So this kind of thing is possible, but we just haven't seen Apple want to do that.
I think we're getting an idea of how difficult this is by watching Dish Network. Charlie Ergen try to cobble together a mobile network by buying Spectrum. You know, he made that hostile bid last week for Clearwire. I don't think that's going to happen.
And that's just in one country.
Yeah. And it's a very iffy thing. And Charlie's super smart and has lots of money. Well, I don't know if he has lots of money, but he has enough money to be a player. Let's put it that way. Maybe he doesn't have $130 billion in the bank. Maybe if he did, it would be a little bit easier. But I just think it's hard. I think there's Spectrum is the issue. Getting Spectrum. And it is not an infinite resource.
Yeah. And pipes aren't a sexy business.
Right. I think Apple, admittedly, Apple would prefer not to have to deal with carriers. But it's better than the alternative.
FCC and all the regulations in other countries.
Right. I think it's just better than the alternative. If you want to be in the phone business. Apple did publish a Chinese New Year gift guide. Which is kind of interesting.
Mooncake in the shape of an Apple TV.
Gonghae Fa Choy Apple.
That's right. It's aimed, I guess, at Hong Kong, Singapore, and Malaysia because it's in English. I think the iPad Mini did quite well, did it not, in China?
It's launching the 3G versions of the iPad 4 and iPad Mini this Friday in China.
Oh, so they're about to come out.
Yeah.
It's almost time to head home with the perfect gifts, reads the Apple Store tagline. Find great gift ideas for everyone on your list in the Chinese New Year gift guide. And then here it is. And the Mini is, this is in Hong Kong dollars. 2,588 Hong Kong dollars. That sounds like a lot.
You could fit a Nano in a red envelope, Leo. I mean, it is workable.
Ah, look at, they even have little, look at this little mini smart cover that looks just like a red envelope, which is the traditional Chinese gift, cash gift, comes in a red envelope. Ah, you're right. You picked right up on that. Here's another one. Michael Kors red Ziploc wallet. This is the modern Chinese New Year. Look at this. A lot of red in this. Let's see. Moving on here. That's the China corner. The China beat.
We hope you enjoyed our references to mooncakes and red envelopes, just proving that we are a very cosmopolitan podcast here at MacBreak Weekly.
Maybe because of this China stuff, the rumor flew that Apple would be developing cheaper iPhone models, a rumor Phil Schiller was quick to debunk. This came from, I think, from Bloomberg, which said that Apple is weighing retail prices of $99 to $149 for a device that would debut in late 2013 at the earliest, according to the person who has to be named, not named because of the negotiation, blah, blah, blah. Although this person said Apple's been talking to at least one of the top U.S. wireless carriers.
That's the part of it that makes no sense to me. I mean, I could in the U.S., we all know, I mean, you can get them for nothing. It's like, how do you get cheaper than $49? Free $49 or $99.
Yeah.
And for $99 is arguably still one of the 4S is still arguably one of the best smartphones you can buy of any operating system.
But that's subsidized by the cell carriers. So it really, the market for a cheaper cell phone is not us.
It's emerging markets.
The carriers.
That's what I'm saying. In the U.S., that doesn't make sense. It might make sense if they were to do this internationally, to say that we can do the ability to sell an unsubsidized phone in any market that they want without having to make those kind of deals. Right. I mean, the I think that the company that can manufacture a really decent smartphone, they could simply sell flat out, unsubsidized at an affordable rate, where they can break the $200 barrier and simply tell people that this phone is just about as good as a top drawer Android. It's just about as good as an iPhone. It costs almost the same as an iPhone. But the thing is, you never have to have a contract. You can put any SIM in it. You can hop from carrier to carrier to carrier. And here's how much money you will save over the cost of a 2-year contract by having this, owning this unlocked phone. I think if a company can ever crack that, that's going to really, really upset a lot of the industry.
Actually, apparently a mistranslation of Phil Schiller's interview with the Shanghai Evening News implied that Apple would never make a cheap phone. In fact, he did not say that. The later translations say he indicated the company would make the best products and never blindly pursue market share. That's kind of what we were just talking about. We're not going to chase market share. We're not going to go for the larger market. We're just going to make the best products.
It's the netbook thing. Apple never makes cheap products, right. But they can make less expensive products. And they've shown over and over again, whether it's the iPad or the iPad mini or the iPod mini or the iPod Shuffle, that they're very good at either removing features or reducing size or making a compromise like screen resolution that lets them put out a high-quality product that is less expensive than the full-blown version. But these rumors about like the cheap iPhone rumors, I remember reading them in 2007, July of 2007, right after the iPhone came out. And I heard from very reliable sources going back 2-3 years that Apple was working on a lower cost version of the iPhone, but they decided instead to drop the price on previous versions, which made a lot of sense in a contract market. So, I mean, this could be just like the television and just like everything else that we hear about, that it's a project in Apple's labs. And when market conditions are good enough, where they believe that emerging markets are something that they want to challenge BlackBerry or Symbian or whomever, or low budget Android phones for, they'll release the product.
So after reading all of the different reportage, it seems that it's unclear whether the original quote was that Phil Schiller said, quote, that cheaper phones would never be the future. That's kind of been withdrawn. And what he really said, John Gruber even says, doesn't mean Apple isn't going to produce a cheaper phone, which if you untangle the double negative means they could.
Never putting video on an iPod.
Yeah. It was unusual though, I have to say, when an Apple executive like Phil Schiller makes remarks on the record, even if it's to a Chinese newspaper, that's unusual, and it's something to pay attention to and parse carefully, because there's a reason why he's making public comment.
True.
Right? They took that story down and put it back up so often.
I know. That's why it's hard to know what it means.
On the other hand, he's not making those comments to a grand jury, so he's free to say whatever he wants.
He's not under oath.
We don't know the laws of China, Andy. We don't know what applies.
Yeah. It was, quote, an official interview. Not an unofficial interview.
Rumors surviving based on the money they're making from emerging markets. S60 or whatever the last build of Symbian is surviving based on emerging markets. There is definitely phone business in those countries.
So you make this distinction between cheaper and less expensive. You even wrote an article on it for iMore.com. What do you mean by that? What is the difference between cheaper and less expensive?
So again, I go back to netbooks. You can take cheap products, use cheap manufacturing techniques, cut a lot of corners, and put out a very cheap product. And that's what Tim Cook says when, you know, you buy it and it seems cheap, but you take it home and it's a horrible experience.
Right.
And, you know, Apple didn't make a cheap version of the iPad. They didn't use substandard technology. You can argue about they didn't use a Retina display, but the build quality on an iPad mini is fantastic and it's less expensive. So Apple has gotten very good over the years, you know, again, starting with the iPod mini and the iPod Shuffle, at putting together a high-quality product that they can still offer at a lower price. And that's very different than just a cheap product that has, you know, squeaky plastic or the parts fall off of it, which has plagued other devices.
Yeah, imagine the shock if Apple ever released something that was, like, cheesy.
Right. Something like a
PowerMac 4400?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've seen there's a Samsung convertible tablet and price-wise is excellent, feature-wise is excellent, but you just hold it in your hands and you're like, wow, I can just feel like the air inside this that is not being supported. I feel as though if I were to just do like this slightly, I would crack the entire thing in half. But that said, however, I mean, you look at a device like the Nexus 7 tablet, there's nothing cheap about it. I mean, there is plastic on the back of it, but it's not as though it's flimsy. It's not as though that it rattles around. You could even say that it makes it easier to grip than slick metal.
And there is subsidized something by Google, which is different than being cheap.
Consumers don't care. Consumers say, "Wow, $200 and it does everything that I want to do for a small tablet. Great, I'll take it."
I think the lesson of netbooks was that you can't in the long run make something that crappy. People know.
Well, no, the lesson of netbooks is that existing notebooks were not serving the modern needs of consumers. Right. That what really blew people's minds about netbooks was the idea where, wait a minute, this has a really cheap mobile processor. It's very, very slow. It has a smaller keyboard that's not nearly as handy to use. But for some reason, people are okay with that. So I think that really was like the signal fire that told a lot of designers and manufacturers that it's okay to delete a lot of features off of a device to make a really compelling $500, $400, even $300 computer, because these days people are not necessarily going to be taking this mobile device out to do 5 hours of spreadsheet work. They're taking it out to just keep up on Facebook and watch videos and stuff like that. So that was just the first expression of a product that eventually became the modern tablet.
Yeah.
So even bad products can be useful.
I do agree that, you know, consumers don't care if a company is subsidizing their product, but John Fingus wrote a really good article on this for Engadget that, for example, the Amazon Kindle is subsidized by Amazon, but only in markets where they can make up that money on content, so it's not available in a lot of countries. The Nexus 4 is subsidized by Google in some countries, but it's hugely expensive in other countries, and traditionally companies that I don't want to say dumping, but that's one term that's applied to it, don't survive over the long point. And those companies, the people who dumped VHS tapes decades ago, VHS players, or companies who dumped other products up until recently, aren't in long-term markets. And Apple has always maintained margin and maintained their business over decades. And I think that's the kind of plan they'll continue. I don't see them operating in a manufacturer-subsidized market.
Well, I mean, that's Amazon. The last time I saw a manufacturing breakdown on a modern color Kindle tablet, they're making a very acceptable profit on each copy that they actually sell. And that doesn't even factor in how much money they're making off of the content of it. Every device that's sold is going to have, whether it's made by Apple or not, is going to have a shelf life of about 2 or 3 years. So you underscore the most important thing I think there is to know about Apple, which is that so long as they can sustain those heavy markups on every product that they make, they have an immense number of freedom to do exactly what they want to do. And one of the Apple's strengths has always been that what they want to do, and this sounds naive, but I'll say it, They want to make great products. They never want to make a single product that they'd be ashamed to give as a gift to a loved one. And that really comes through in every single, practically every single thing they do and every single thing that they actually ship.
That's Steve Jobs beat into them. I think that they did make some crappy products under the Gil D'Amelio era.
Yeah, that just feels that, hey, we have this gap in our product line. Right. It feels as though we should be making an all-in-one that has these features, so we're going to make this feature. It feels as though we should be selling computers through big box retailers. We'll make a special model that we can sell through a big box retailer. Right. Whereas now they're saying that is a good idea, but we can't make a computer that we would be happy with that way, so we're not going to do it.
Exactly.
So the fact that – I'm sorry, I will wind this up. The fact that Apple can be so successful selling high markup and high – really expensive compared to other comparable models doesn't mean that every other company has to do that. There are ways to make a decent profit on smaller margins.
But to get back to something Renee was talking about earlier, though, is that Apple has been doing awfully well in hardware. I won't in any way criticize their hardware, but I really think the software quality has been flopping. That iOS 6 has significant bugs. Mountain Lion has issues. They're releasing, they do an update and it kills stuff. I mean, security updates, we're bricking MacBooks. I mean, this is the kind of thing which it just says that they're not testing, if anything else.
Is it the Scott Forstall problem? Is it going to be better now that he's gone?
I don't know, but it's been bad for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And I have not seen that commitment to just saying, this is going to work and it's going to work right.
I think we also have some rosy glasses.
A friend of mine who's an iOS developer. A friend of mine who's an iOS developer says that he's reported more bugs with iOS 6 than all of the previous versions of iOS combined. And they've come back marked as duplicates, so they're real. I mean, he's not making this stuff up.
Mm. Renee, were you about to say that this has always been this way?
No, yeah, I think history kind of blurs things a little bit. But every time a new version of iOS comes out or Mountain Lion comes out, we get flooded with people who have problems. I mean, the 0.0 version of every version of iOS has been hugely problematic, and now it's compounded with things like iCloud, which if you talk to any developer, maybe Key Value Store works great, but Document Store is a nightmare. And there's just so many things happening in iOS now that it sort of magnifies the problem. And if that's a Scott Forstall issue or not, we'll see with Craig Federighi running everything. But iOS 6 was very much Apple's placeholder. They got Google off their operating system. They sent out social to Twitter and Facebook, and they set up a lot of stuff. And I think now is the year we have to watch them deliver on that foundation.
Yeah.
But they broke a lot of existing stuff. Audio is broken in iOS 6.
Maybe it's a measure of how many lines of code there are. This, as you said, this stuff is much more complex than it used to be. It's hard to make it as reliable.
Although audio breaks every beta. Every beta will break audio. I forget there's a specific reason for that in core audio, but every time you get a beta, things like the podcast app and the iTunes app stop working for any normal human, which is why you shouldn't install them. And usually they fix it, but there's always little issues that follow the new release. And now they're doing less releases. In previous years, we'd have a 1.1, a 0.2, a 0.3, and we're still on iOS 6.0.
Just to reiterate, though, this is not the kind of thing we see happening in the hardware world. Right. But in the hardware world, Apple is taking the time to get it right, to get those millimeter measurements to as small as they possibly can. That doesn't come easy either, and yet they're doing that. They're just not doing it on the software side.
They are a hardware company.
A hardware company if their software works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you, Adam. I mean, there are a short number of things that are absolute Apple, have historically been absolute Apple signature features, and one of them is always, I'm sure you can almost say this with me, it just works. Yes. And I think that in 2012 they lost that. I don't know if they lost that completely, but there's no longer for me that sort of assumption that if I go with iOS, if I go with macOS, this thing is going to function stable and securely for the foreseeable future. I just don't trust it to work that way. And as to Renee's point, absolutely true. Again, anytime you go to a 0.0 release, you got to. That's the dust cloud on the horizon. That's when you know that the person that the sheriff put into jail 5 years ago just escaped and he's headed back to Dry Gulch for retribution. You know that bad things are going to be happening. But the difficulty is that they've made so many changes to so many basic things that if iCloud is screwed up and iCloud is the only easy way to move documents between yourself and your devices, yes, that's a big issue. And that's something that really affects everything. And it's not enough to make someone abandon what they're familiar with and what they like, but it is enough so that if they are at end of contract and now they're kind of looking around where they say, wow, you mean this Windows phone, show me SkyDrive again. Wow, you mean it's that easy to, I mean, the people I share this document with can actually edit it on a web page. They don't even necessarily need, wow, that's interesting. And whether that's a legitimate thing that they're doing or just simply reacting to a good demo, that doesn't change the fact that now they're locked into a different phone for 2 years instead of being locked into an iPhone. It's an interesting new variable, I think. That's all.
Speaking of things that just don't work, you probably saw the Department of Homeland Security told users to disable Java support in their browsers because Java 7 has such a massive security vulnerability, and it is already being exploited in the wild. Safari does, unlike Internet Explorer, where there's really actually no way to disable Java support, at least not fully. Safari does have a simple checkbox that just says, you know, don't use it. It's in the security. It says, you know, web content enable Java. Just uncheck that, and you're protected because it's that's the issue, is Java loading on web pages. However, Apple has done something interesting. I guess they did this in an update. They updated the XProtect plist backlist to require for Java to work on Macs an as-yet unreleased version of Java 7, presumably the patch that Oracle or Apple plan to push. So if you try to use Java 7 on OS 10, it's going to fail the check in the anti-malware system, and it's just not going to run. That's the Java 7 plugin. So I presume that Apple, I was just checking update to see if Apple has pushed out an update, and it doesn't look like they have for, OS 10, but the best bet really, cause most websites don't use Java. The best bet is just to disable Java in Safari and move on. It's not that easy in Chrome either. You have to do Chrome:// plugins and look for Java plugins. Although, to Google and Apple's everlasting credit, when you do run Java in Safari or Chrome, anytime you run it, regardless of what your settings are, it will warn you and say, you're about to run Java. Are you sure? You really want to do that? So you still have one last chance to say no.
Yeah.
I have not. I should try. I don't understand if this was an update. It must have been an update to OS 10 that I didn't see.
Unless there's a kill switch.
Yeah, basically it's a kill switch. It says, you can't run it until you get the update. T-Mobile will soon sell iPhones, according to the CEO at CES. No surprise there. They've wanted to do that for a while.
I saw T-Mobile 3G at CES. I haven't seen that outside of Moscone Center before.
HSPA Plus, right? Not LTE.
On an iPhone. They were doing it on
an iPhone.
Yeah, on the frequencies.
Little box out front or something.
A bubble.
And something we talked about on Sunday, and we will be talking about on Thursday on a special. Personal Audio LLC is suing podcasters in East Texas. They sued Apple last year. I did not know this. In 2011... they sued and won a patent infringement lawsuit against Apple and won an $8 million judgment. The jury found Apple infringed two patents related to downloadable playlists with iOS devices, one covering an audio program player, including a dynamic program selection controller, the other covering audio program distribution playback system. They're now going after content creators directly. They've sued Adam Carolla's Ace Broadcasting and the How Stuff Works podcast, saying they have violated a patent for a system for disseminating media content representing episodes in a serialized sequence. You laugh. I'm crying.
Dickens. Wait, it was Dickens, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dickens invented that. I'm just waiting for the summons to arrive at our front desk.
The Lotsis letter.
Yeah. This is crazy. So we're going to talk to Adam. We'll do a special simulcast between Adam Carolla's a podcast, 7 o'clock in the evening, Pacific time, Thursday evening, 10 p.m.
This is like the
Eastern.
Formation of the Avengers. It's wonderful.
Well, you know, to Adam's credit, normally when you get sued, you say, my lawyers say we're not going to talk about this. But I think it's really important that we all talk about it, as risky as it is, and to come up with a strategy to try to save podcasting. These guys already won. Against
Apple. What they're suing over, Leo? Like, is it over the app that distributes it, over the creation of the RSS feed, over the?
It sounds like it's the creation of the RSS feed. I haven't seen the lawsuit, and maybe Adam will have a better idea. I could read you the patent that they're that they claim.
A dramatic reading, Leo?
Would you like a dramatic reading, ladies and gentlemen? A system for disseminating media content representing episodes in a serialized sequence. You can't. I'm not a lawyer, and you know, if I read these things, they don't make any sense to me. I don't even know why you could patent something like this. They filed for this patent, covered. I might point out, in 2009, and were awarded it last year. An audio program and message distribution system in which a host system organizes and transmits program segments to client subscriber locations. By the way, we do not do that. iTunes might do that. The host organizes the program segments by subject matter and creates scheduled programming in accordance with preferences associated with each subscriber. We do not do that. Program segments are associated with descriptive subject matter segments, and the subject matter segments may be used to generate both text and audio. This doesn't sound like it's related at all, but this is what they're suing over.
Probably assuming that everyone will just settle because it's cheaper for them than litigating. Precisely. They'll get $1,000 from everybody.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And the fact that they have an $8 million, they've also, they say they have licenses from many, many other companies, including BlackBerry, including XM or Sirius, I guess. So I don't, you know, we'll have a much more detailed conversation. In fact, I'll try to get some lawyers on with us on a Thursday night and talk about it. But I just think the podcasting community needs to say, hey, wait a minute. Hold on there. Slow down. Yeah.
Has there ever been like a summit between like guys like you and Adam Carolla and Chris Hardwick, the people who like head podcasting networks, to talk about these sort of issues?
No, but
either
I think
as a show or even just like let's get together for dinner, get a private dinner room and just talk about where we're going.
Not to my knowledge, unless they had one.
It sounds like it'd be an interesting dinner.
Yeah. I think probably we should do one in public and then one in private. In which we could divide the known world.
Collusion
in a volcano headquarters.
Yeah, exactly.
You know the room that they film, like the meeting of the five family scenes of The Godfather. I believe that is actually a building that is still exists, and you can actually use that room.
Oh, that would be cool.
just put a bunch of walnuts in front of everybody. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, the good news about what we do is that we're in such the infancy that we are not in any way really competing with each other. So now's the time to decide who gets drugs, who gets numbers, who gets prostitution.
What Jason had this week at Radio Canceled, I forgot all vengeance because this is the business we have chosen.
Exactly.
However, if Mac Break Weekly should lose its bandwidth or be struck by a bolt of lightning, then I will know.
And if Adam Carolla is there, it will be liberally, profusely salted with profanity. It's funny. We all get along. I'll tell you the closest to that, which I was at a week ago, is the New Media Expo. And that was a great event with a lot of podcasters there. Not the big names, though. I think Chris Hardwick came later. Adam and Chris were in town for CES. I don't think they came to Podcast Expo or at New Media Expo. But I don't know. I think maybe now is a good time to start doing it.
I mean, you are the Beatles of podcasting.
Exactly. And, John, Paul, you know, George, and Leo.
Exactly. I don't even mean that as a joke. That, you know,
I do.
It would be an interesting experiment,
yeah.
If nothing else.
Yeah. Interesting. And I'll just have an intern start my car for the next few months. Good suggestion, Beatmaster.
Not only that, but you could also like start a charity tontine where each of you puts the names, your favorite charity, and puts $5,000 in the pot. Given like these the personalities and what you guys do for a living,
yeah.
And the last person to you'll have the private meeting and the public meeting, and the last person to ever mention something that happens at the private meeting gets the entire pot for his charity. Because that's because at some point, all of you are podcasting 20 hours a day. You're saying, well, and then Leo Laporte, he showed me the sprint. Oh, damn it. I mentioned the Watsy show me.
Sorry, Leo. Okay, I lose the $5,000.
I would lose that one for sure right away. One more story, then we're going to take a break and get to our tips and products of the week. I know you all have some. But if you were watching this morning when Facebook announced its social search feature? Any thoughts about that, any of you? Renee, did you watch it?
I did. I was lured there by the often present rumors of a Facebook phone, and then I got to watch it with the folks from Tech News today. They were kind enough to have me on, so we got to to watch it as it happened. And I mean, social graph search is interesting. Its natural language interface is interesting. I just am hoping that all that stuff gets wrapped up into an API so that my iPhone and Siri can search with it in iOS 7.
Wouldn't that be nice?
But I think it's also like it's a way for Facebook to try to convince us to give it more data, which is actually like Facebook's business is not making search for us. It's getting our data from us, and they surface search as a way to get it. So none of my family, none of my close friends, none of my real acquaintances use Facebook. So it'll have limited appeal to me. But I can see pressure mounting to say, you know, what are Renee, I can't find your restaurants. Why aren't your restaurants in Facebook?
That's exactly what they
want. I don't
want
to tell you. Ask me personally.
No, it's too much trouble.
I mean, I don't want to talk to you. I just want to know what your data is.
The simple fact of the matter is that I think you have to actually care what large numbers of other random people think. And I would never search for something on Facebook.
That's different. Like it's not a large number of random people, a large number of people that you care about. I was
but
in my
it's
meeting
Facebook.
Was in,
they're random. They're not well, yeah, friends. Exactly. No, this is Facebook we're talking.
I mean, I
see
the kind
unquote friends.
I see the kind of point that they're kind of making. I mean, yesterday I was in New York City. Unexpectedly, people from like Europe that I was meeting with asked me, "Hey, let's go to lunch. You're American. You must know a great restaurant in New York City." And I know a few, but it's like I wish that if there were a way that collectively all the people I know who live in New York City could be polled and asked. I'm at 57th and Broadway. What's a good restaurant within, let's say, a 5-block radius, and get that sort of answer? That'd be valuable. But what was disappointing about that entire announcement, to which, by the way, Facebook teased a week in advance with a big like media event sort of a push. Is that if you don't give a damn about Facebook already, this is of absolutely no use to you. It's not going to make somebody want to make Facebook a bigger part of their lives. And it seems as though the push is towards integration as opposed to making sure that you're spending most of your time inside one social network. If they were saying that we have forged an alliance with pretty much every social network that's out there, that on an explicit opt-in basis, if your friend is more of a Twitter person or more of a Google Plus person, they can integrate with you. You personally can have access to their search results, so you will get that sort of invaluable personal recommendations and personal information. As is, it's like I'm not going to switch my Facebook habits, which now is I will dip in there once a week just to see like what my nieces and nephews in college are up to. That's what I do with Facebook right now. I really don't post anything to it. I'm not going to start investing in Facebook just because I want to find out what a restaurant is like in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on the off chance someone has actually been there. It's just not a good value proposition for me.
I think there's a tie into Bing as well, which means that if you used Bing, which I don't know anybody who does, but if somebody used Bing, then you'd get some social signals.
Well, any search that Facebook's not doing now will offset to Bing, so you'll get a Bing result instead of a Facebook
result. Oh, it's in that direction, not the other direction.
Yeah.
So it'd be better if we're in the other direction. Like I search Bing, and then I get it's massaged by social results.
Because it is all about get you inside Facebook and make sure that you don't have to, you know, Facebook is the great casino of social media. The idea is to make sure that they can feed you into they give you restaurants inside Facebook. They give you Penn and Teller inside Facebook. They give you a hotel inside Facebook. Right, exactly. So that you always are within reach of the slot machines, which is the social media information. They do not want you ever to step foot outside Facebook until you've got no more money left and they've got the titles to your car and your house.
All right, let's take a break. Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, from Tidbits.com, Adam Angster all here, and we're going to get their picks of the week in just a moment. But first, I have a pick for you, a way to back up your data, Mac or PC, for less than $5 a month per computer for everything, automatic, continuous, off-site backup. It's everything you need in backup. It's Carbonite.com. Because Carbonite allows you not only to automatically encrypts during transmission, but allows you to further encrypt your data when it's there. It's complete trust no one protection. So if privacy is an issue, Carbonite is a great choice. A lot of other services do not offer that kind of trust no one encryption. It's also cloud storage, which is nice. And they don't really tout this, but what's nice is you can see your data anytime. You don't have to wait for a disaster to strike. Just log on to your Carbonite account on any computer or use their iPhone or iPad app, and there's your stuff. You can download it and use it. So you've got the benefit of cloud storage plus a backup you can trust. Automatic and continuous means it's always up to date. It's a great way to make sure that you can sleep tonight. Try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card, just our offer code MACBREAK. If you decide to buy, $59 a year, and if you've used the offer code MACBREAK, you'll get 14 months for that price, an additional 2 months free. Automatic, continuous backup, off-site, so it's safe even if the worst happens. That's Carbonite. Carbonite.com. The offer code is MACBREAK. Give it a try today. Our picks of the week will kick off with you, Andy Iannocco.
Mine is something that's somewhat old news, but suddenly new news to people in 22 cities. It's Aereo, the Aereo streaming TV service.
Ooh.
One of the best announcements from CES last week was that this service is going to be expanding into 22 new cities. What it is, and hopefully you can see it, and there we go behind me, is that it's a streaming service where that gives you all the broadcast TV channels inside your metro area. Available for DVR recording, available for streaming, and playable through almost any desktop browser and through iOS Safari browsers. I just love this because it is so deviously cunning. And here it is. We're streaming right now the PBS station.
So it's in Boston?
It's this is only in New York right now. This is actually a demo account that they gave me for testing purposes. It is let me explain that if you haven't heard about this before, the deviousness, the cunning of this idea. What it is ordinarily they'd have to license the feed from NBC, do a deal with CBS, do a deal with Fox. What they did was instead, I'm going to pause so that you can actually hear me. What they did instead was they they said, well, what if we have a different antenna for every subscriber that we have? We just put up an antenna that we simply lease to each one of our subscribers in that city. And they came up with this technology where for every subscriber, there's a little antenna the size of a dime set up someplace. So that, we are not recording any of this. We're not rebroadcasting. We're just simply letting people use the antenna that this user actually owns and uses.
Yeah, you're renting an antenna.
Exactly.
Antenna
so
shifting.
So they open. Exactly. So they and you can record, you can do all the sort of stuff. So they opened it up in New York City last year, basically to see if they would get sued into oblivion, but they actually and
they did get sued.
The investment. They did get sued. They won most. Excuse me. They were successful enough that they were able to now expand. They got $38 million in funding. And now this is going to be like a school and a snow announcement. Wait until your city has been announced. It's now going to be available soon in the next couple of months in these following cities: Atlanta, Austin, Baltimore, Birmingham, Alabama, Boston, go Pats, Chicago, Cleveland, Dallas, Denver, Detroit, Houston, Kansas City. I don't know whether they're next door to each other. Madison, Wisconsin, Miami, Minneapolis, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Providence, Rhode Island, Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, Salt Lake City, Tampa, Florida, and Washington, D.C.
Nowhere on the West, I might add.
Nowhere on the West.
They don't want to go anywhere near Hollywood on this one.
Exactly. You don't want them to hear who you are. And the pricing is really, really great. You can get this access to this for one day for a dollar. So if you're – and I should mention that this only is available to you if you live in that city. And it's not as though – so it's not as though you can like be living someplace and get like local sports games. But it's a dollar a day for a day pass if you just want it for one day. For a month is $8, for a year it's $80, and that includes 40 hours worth of DVR. Really, really great stuff. This really has brought me a many steps closer to wanting to cut cable because that was one of the missing pieces. Because ever since the change over to digital broadcasting, I lost And I'll get, of five broadcast networks, I get maybe three of them. And I don't get CBS. And I, since I like to watch Letterman, that's a big minus for me. But I really recommend you go to Aereo.com, A-E-R-E-O.com, if you're in any of those cities. They're not going to be getting started for another couple of months. But if you pre-sign up, you'll be one of the first who's who are able to sign up for an account there. And it works just brilliantly great. And the price is pretty much just right there, too.
It's really great for the iPad. One of our viewers was visiting us.
Yeah.
You know who she is. And she brought her Aereo and her iPad account on her iPad. So we were able to watch it here because it's over the internet. And it really is kind of neat to be able to watch local TV. It does solve that last mile problem that cord cutters have to survive. Yeah.
It's lovely. And what I like, what you're seeing, the video that you're seeing behind me is actually being streamed off of my LTE iPad. So that's
good quality.
That's what you get just HD just off of LTE, and they just did a whole bunch of things that were very correct about this. One of them is that you can manually select what quality video you want to stream. So if you are like on a 3G network, or if you're on really dodgy like hotel Wi-Fi or something, you can simply say, I know what David Letterman looks like at this point in my life. You can just give me the lowest quality just to maximize the limited bandwidth that I have.
I have to point out this is an interim solution that someday the cable companies and the television networks will become more enlightened and make this all work over the internet without the use of these kludgy little 10-cent antennas. But until then, I think...
Until the meteor hits the dinosaurs.
This is Barry Diller's company, by the way. And I think Barry is old and he says, you know, I know it's only going to be 10 years before this is completely useless. I'll make some money now. I'll worry about that later. I think it's great. I really like the idea. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I have two half picks. I wanted to first make sure I echoed Sarah's pick from last week, which is Hundreds, a new game for the iPhone and iPad.
Oh, I haven't played
it. Made by Adam Saltzman, who did Cannibalt, along with some of his partners. And I used that on the plane, in the hotel, everywhere over CES to keep me, whenever there was some downtime, just to relax. And it's a fantastic,
fun
game.
Is it better than Simpsons Tapped Out?
It's different. It's it's more of a brain teaser made game.
I can't stop playing this. Help me, somebody, please. I rebuilt Springfield.
Other one is doing what I do is very strange because I travel for half the year and then I'm pretty much home for half the year. So starting with CES, there's Macworld, GDC, WWDC, other shows. So every January, like clockwork, I install TripIt and I just email everything that I get to TripIt.
Yeah.
I have the paid app, the pro account, and it takes care of everything. Because come January, I've forgotten how to run my travel life. I lose track of everything. And TripIt just, it pops up alerts. It tells me about gate changes, would happen all the time, travel changes when planes or runways are iced down, and it means that I don't have to worry about that anymore, and that's the best kind of technology for me.
Hundreds by Semi-Secret Software, is that the one?
Yeah, and we actually had the pleasure of doing an hour-long interview with Adam about the game, and we'll have that up on Friday.
Oh, fun.
The way he thinks about level design is really interesting.
I'm downloading it right now, $4.99. All right. My life is over. Adam Engst, your pick of the week.
Well, one of the things that's been bothering me for a long, long time about the whole social media scene is the fact that you kind of have to choose. And I don't want to choose. I want to post one thing and have it go everywhere else, the cross-posting debate. And the simple fact is I see myself as a publisher, and people can choose to read me wherever they wish. And the best place I've found for the sort of starting my post is Google Plus. And there's a new service called Friends Plus Me. That's www.friendsplus.me, which is the first of these things I've seen that doesn't feel like a really serious hack. That there's been a ton of little ways of getting Google Plus to cross-post to Twitter and to Facebook, but they've really all been pretty hoary behind the scenes. And Friends Plus Me, it's got an attractive dashboard and it just works. Ooh, that Apple saying that, you know, it just seems to work. There's nothing too fussy about it. You want to post something from Google Plus to the other services, you can either do so via a hashtag or just say everything that goes to the public should be sent on. The only downside, of course, is that when you're not limited to 140 characters on Twitter, you know, things get truncated and there has to be a URL sending it back to the Google Plus. People on Twitter are sending them back to the Google Plus page to be able to read the full thing. But, as I said, certain level of... I'm just tired of having to think about each of these places as a different venue. I don't ever post to Facebook, so cross-posting from one of these other sites is the best way to get me there at all. And Google Plus has been working pretty well for me.
Now, the only thing that puzzles me about it is the website look is a ripoff of the Squarespace. So that's Friends Plus Me, and that's the Squarespace site. Friends Plus Me. Squarespace. Maybe it is Squarespace. I don't know. I looked at the bottom. I didn't see. But, boy, that's maybe this is just like, this is the new look. All sites, someday all sites will look like this.
And you have to, you can't automatically post to Google Plus, so that has to be the origin of all your stuff.
Ah, and that's key, because Google Plus does not have a write API. So,
yeah.
Like all of these plugins, you start at Google Plus and then it goes to Facebook, Twitter, and like
that. I believe there actually is starting to be a write API. I just got email from a service we use called Deliverit, DLVR.IT.
We use it too.
That posts our the Tidbits news headlines to our Facebook page. And they just said, if you have a pro or a premium account on Deliverit, you can, you know, we'll post to Google Plus for you now.
Really?
So it's possible that that API is opening up in a small way.
Interesting.
But the Google Plus app, I have to say, the Google Plus apps on the iPhone and the iPad are really pretty. They're a little stupid in ways. You know, if the post fails for whatever reason, it just loses everything you typed. But it's still a pretty system, and you know, it feels more Flipboard like than just say reading Twitter or whatnot on the iPhone. So as that, I actually almost never read any of these services. I deal with them as a publisher, so I'm in write only mode. But nonetheless, I'll respond to whatever people reply back.
I'm going to mention something that comes from our sponsor, Squarespace, actually. I don't know if anybody's mentioned this before. It came out in October. It's free, and it's really cool, and you don't have to have a Squarespace account. It's called Squarespace Note, and I know a lot of our audience has started to use it, and I thought, man, you know, I probably should talk about this. It's an iPhone app, but I could show it on the iPad. It works just fine. It's a way of taking notes on your iPhone that then you share with lots of other places. The folks at Squarespace have a pretty advanced iOS development team, so they've done a great job, I think, of keeping their own iPhone and iPad app up to date. And Squarespace Note allows you. And I thought, Andy, since you mentioned that you use Evernote, you might be interested in this. It's just a new interface to Evernote, in effect, because it will save. To Evernote, it also saved to Squarespace. You can email it, Twitter, or Facebook, or Dropbox. But it's got a very nice note-taking app that's just elegant as heck. I can't figure out how to get back into it because I started to share a note. That's the other thing. It's a lot. Oh, there we go. Here we go. So it's very clean. You just type your note, and then you slide down. Let's see. Is that right? Nope. Maybe it's a slide. Oh, yeah. Oh. You slide from the left to see your other notes. You slide down. I always have trouble sliding down on iOS to send your note. And then you can send it to all these other places. Never mind. Forget I even mentioned it. It's clean. A lot of people recommend it. It's a very clean way of sharing, of creating notes. Very clean. You would like it, Andy, because I know you want a very simple, clean. You know, my problem is maybe I just never get the. How do you get this keyboard off of here? I never want that keyboard. Anyway, there's more stuff underneath there I can't get to. Forget it. Free. Use it. You might like it. I don't use it, but a lot of people recommended this, and so I thought I'd give Squarespace a little plug for it. They've really done a nice job. Beautiful, simple, clean. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Mac Break Weekly. I do want to thank our talented team, especially you, Adam Engst, for making time in your busy day.
Thank you. Thank you.
Join us. We always love having you. On. Is it freezing cold and snowing?
I wish. As I said, it was 55 degrees a couple days ago.
Crazy.
And all of our snow is gone. I'm going to have to move north at some point.
You're in Upper New York State, and it's 55 degrees. I don't get it.
Yeah.
We have Putin here, Adam. Do it.
Yeah, I think. Up in Montreal, you've got snow, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's melting into ice and then refreezing and then melting again and refreezing. So we have layer cake ice now.
Layer cake ice.
I'm going to his house.
It's a special kind of ice just for people who like to live in the frozen north.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here. Adam Engst is at tidbits.com. That is a great place to go to subscribe to his free Tidbits weekly newsletter. Although my recommendation, if you like it, is to become a sustaining supporter. Because your contribution, if you're a member, keeps Tidbits going, and you just do such a great job. It's such a resource. The longest running Macintosh publication, 21 years, and
we going actually strong. We've actually gotten a new number there, Leo. We are now the oldest publication, internet only publication around.
Wow.
The previous record holder, the people that was the Irish Emigrant News, they retired last year.
They folded.
It was great.
Finally, you buried them. You buried them, Adam.
you put them at it.
That was the beauty part. I didn't wish them any ill at all. I didn't want them to go under or anything like that. And they retired. That's right, Adam. They just got old. It was perfect.
The winner of Survivor Newsletter.
So, well, that's nice. The oldest running, longest running internet publication of them all.
You are the London Times of the technical online press.
It's the only one.
They also do those great Take Control ebooks. So another wonderful resource. You can find it all at TIDBITS.com. Renee's from iMore.com, the king of the iPad iPhone rumor mill. iPhone 5S, what do you think, June?
It's going to be interesting this year because there's this big spring period where they've released everything, but traditionally they have iOS devices. So you're anticipating the iPad mini with a Retina display, a thinner, lighter iPad 4 with a new design language, and however many iPhones they release this year. So it's going to be an interesting year.
But you do have a big article saying, forget the new hardware. 2013 is all about iOS 7 and iCloud.
I really believe that.
So I from your lips to Tim's ears, I hope you're right. Because they could both use a little bit of a adjustment.
Kick in the pants.
Yeah, kick in the pants. There's the phrase I was looking for. From the Chicago Sun-Times and a regular here, of course, Andy Iannocco. Always a pleasure, Andy. You didn't miss anything not going to Vegas, I can tell you that much. You coming out for Macworld?
No, I'm afraid not.
Ah, bummer.
But Adam, we'll miss you. What are your plans for Macworld? Are you doing your party?
Yeah. If you're available for the Vast Media Conspiracy Dinner.
The Vast Media Conspiracy Dinner.
I might come up a couple days early and visit you, Leo.
Please do, Renee. That'd be fun. I'll let you play with my new 27-inch iMac, which is right behind me.
Awesome.
I got it with the Fusion Drive on it. So the next thing I really want to do is spend some time kind of... it's a funny thing because you can't really test the Fusion Drive very easily. Because it supposedly gets faster as you use it.
Mm. I just thought of a really mean-spirited practical joke that people in that office could do to you. What they could do is just take like a half-inch strip of like masking tape and put it on the side of it, and then people would have no idea that you actually have the brand new iMac there. Cause otherwise, would look exactly the same as last year's model.
I can't get up because I'm wired in, but we wanted to get a pedestal or something to rotate it. Because from the front, yeah, it looks like when you see the bulge, it doesn't look that thin, but there's one angle. It looks really, really thin. Okay, here comes Chad. Chad is going to rotate. Oh, look. Wow. There it is. From that angle, it disappears.
It just disappears.
If you're watching,
it's two-dimensional.
Yeah.
It's flatland.
And I got 16 gigs of RAM and i7, 3.4 gigahertz i7 and... what else did I get in there? The Fusion Drive, 3 terabyte Fusion Drive. So I'm excited. I'll be playing with it, and I'll give you some updates on it. It's light. It's the first thing you notice.
I'm sure that your iMac steward will be very, very pleased that you upgraded.
You know what they wanted to use it for? And I said, you can't. They want to use my old one, which is only a year old now. With a very fast processor and dual drives, SSD and spinning drive. Well, you're going to use it for what? A Skype test machine, right?
Skype test machine.
No.
We don't have any other... We have too many computers here.
Well, I'm not giving it away. See, don't say that because then the chat room's going to say, well, you can give it to me. You can give it to me. Anyway, no, we'll find something good for it. The last one, my last iMac is now at the front desk for reception. Where my daughter last summer, during her summer internship, watched all 8 seasons of The Office in sequence. Not a lot going on at the front desk.
You need 7, Leo, like the Steve Jobs yacht. Every year you can add a new one.
That's an idea. There you go. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. Do watch live. Love to have the chat room. It's always fun to have you watching and listening and communicating with us. But if you can't, don't worry. You can always catch any audio and video that we do here in the Twit Brick House on demand after the fact. Just download it from twit.tv or wherever finer podcasts are stored. And if you choose to use the patent-infringing iTunes, be it on your own head. No, please, be my guest. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work. Break time. I never remember the ending of this. Break time is over. Take care.